This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We're off to Carson, to Dignity Health Sports Park. You probably know it as the former Home Depot turned StubHub Center. It's a big soccer stadium, and it's home field for the Los Angeles Galaxy. Earlier this summer, KCRW's Bob Carlson and I did a story about the other LA soccer team, the Los Angeles Football Club, or LAFC. And we went deep into their passionate supporter section, called the 3252.
So I'm Bob Carlson. I'm counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. At least, gosh, two dozen of these giant flags.
Yeah, we're still 10 minutes away. The game hasn't even started yet.
That story about LAFC and the fact that a team only in its second season has garnered so much rabid support rubbed just a few folks the wrong way.
I was not offended wouldn't be the right word.
Tyler Hale is KCRW's digital music editor. We share a workspace, and boy, I had to hear all about it.
We're talking about one of the greatest sports clubs in, you know, MLS history here, the Galaxy. And historically, the Galaxy are the cream of the crop. We've had a tremendous history with players from leagues in Europe and South America and Mexico wanting to play and represent and wear the Galaxy badge on their shirt. And that's because, you know, this has always been the crown jewel of Major League Soccer.
And Tyler's not alone in his assessment. There were plenty of you who've had enough of the media coverage of the shiny new thing here in L.A. and wanted to respectfully point out that there is another soccer team in Los Angeles. In a history that dates back more than 20 years, the Galaxy have won 5 MLS Cups, a league record, and they've attracted some of the most famous soccer players in the world, Steven Gerrard, David Beckham, and now center forward Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who is a goal-scoring machine. And the team is worth a lot, about $330 million. It is consistently ranked as one of the most valuable franchises in Major League Soccer. So yeah, Galaxy fans have a lot to brag about, though it must be noted that the LAFC is ranked first this season in the entire league by a lot. And if you get the feeling there's an intense rivalry here, you will see it on display Sunday when the teams play each other. At a recent Galaxy game in Carson, tailgater Andrew Alisana was standing in the parking lot hanging out with a big group of friends, donning blue and gold and a whole lot of pride. He went to a Galaxy LAFC game a few weeks ago here in Carson. This Sunday, he'll be heading to enemy turf at Bank of California Stadium for the rematch. A place, he says, it's none too friendly.
You know, they kind of let their fans just kind of roam around the stadium and try to pick fights with us. But, you know, it is what it is. I'll be there, but I mean, whatever. It's not the most intense situation I've ever been in. I've been to Tijuana for a game. That was pretty crazy. Down there is nothing. I mean, they want to act tough, but not really.
We've had challenges when it comes to safety and security at Bank of California. There were a number of fans who were involved from a Galaxy perspective that were beat up, and there was some elements of fan violence.
That's Galaxy VP of Marketing Brendan Hannon. Now, there's been some controversy in recent weeks with LAFC supporters complaining that the Galaxy canceled some of their tickets when the two teams last played. They say the Galaxy invalidated those tickets because they were afraid the LAFC supporters would drown them out in their own stadium. But Hannon says those tickets were canceled out of an abundance of caution.
For us, the concern was placing two competing supporter groups next to each other wasn't the right thing, and so we had to cancel a small number of those tickets. But I think that it was best for everyone involved when it comes to safety and security of our fans here at our building.
The Galaxy beat LAFC 3-2 in that contentious game. And even though LAFC is firmly in first place, tailgater Amy Arenas says the Galaxy know how to pull out wins and championships.
At the end of the day, it's who holds the most titles. And I gotta say, you know, LA Galaxy has had that, you know, for a very long time. We're really proud of them. As you can tell,
Ibrahimovic, yeah.
We gotta represent what we get out of the country. You know, we're very lucky to have talent, you know, and you know, within the states.
No matter, she says, what flashy thing the other team does. There's no doubt LAFC's entry into the LA market has affected the Galaxy. Despite early concerns that there might not be enough soccer fans to support two pro teams in one city, Brendan Hannon says having both has actually raised all boats. And since the LAFC came along, the Galaxy's attendance is actually up.
Yeah, I mean, I think competition in any area is good. I think it forces both clubs to be better. I think it forces both clubs to make sure that they're investing in their fans, the fan experience.
On this night in Carson, those fans are going crazy for Zlatan Ibrahimovic, with ravenous supporters chanting to one another on opposite sides of the stadium, back and forth, and back and forth. They have the Angel City Brigade and the Galaxians and the group called Ghosts Ultras in the north side of the stadium. There's another group, the LA Riot Squad, on the south side. The Galaxy won their game against Dallas Football Club 2-0, with star player Ibrahimovic scoring both goals. Afterwards, he sounded pretty proud.
And I think we did a good game today, very good. Last game was also good, but we didn't score goals. And today we got the 3 points we deserved.
Now, the word deserved is an interesting choice by the Swedish soccer star, because Galaxy fans believe the team deserves the respect of a city with a whole slew of sports options, including that other football club across L.A. Superfan Tyler Hale says for decades his team actually set the American soccer standard, showing the way for expansion teams to generate the success that we see across town.
Really what the Galaxy have done, and they set the blueprint for LAFC, let's be honest, they were splashy. They were out there, and they still are today. They want to make smart moves. They invest in the club. A lot of teams in the MLS have kind of stayed back, and the Galaxy wrote the blueprint for that. You know, LAFC, all this, the splashy, you know, stadium and, you know, player signings, Galaxy kind of set all that in motion.
All those things replicated by other teams, except for all those championships, which no one has been able to touch. The Galaxy play LAFC at 7:30 Sunday night at Bank of California Stadium. Don't forget your blood pressure medicine. Well, just ahead, photographing an important moment for parents inside the delivery room. Doulas with cameras next on KCRW's Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. The birth of a child is a beautiful, messy, painful, confusing, exhilarating, life-changing experience. It also seems like a very private one. But we're posting anything and everything on Facebook these days, or on Instagram or TikTok, you name it. So why not document the baby's first moments of life, too? In fact, there's a big and growing trend right here in LA for new parents, and it's called birth photography. Professional photographers invited into the birthing room, the delivery room, to document the whole thing for posterity. And a couple of those photographers are in the studio with me right now to talk about it. Diana Hynek is a doula and birth photographer. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Stephanie Enten, also a doula, birth photographer. She's with us in the studio. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Steve.
I'm going to start with you because when I think of birth photography, when I think of the delivery room in general, I think of a very intimate place, a very life-changing experience happens in there. It's a sterile environment. The last thing that I think should, or my opinion, the last thing I would think would be in a room like that would be a camera.
Yeah, Yeah, it's kind of a new idea, I think, to a lot of people. But it definitely is becoming more prominent because people are learning more and more about it. But families these days are wanting to have these profound moments captured.
Explain to me how you go. I mean, do you go to a hospital and say, I'd like to use your delivery room to take pictures, or I want to offer this service to new moms or to, you know, someone who's about to give birth?
No, that's not exactly how it happens. It's usually from the client because the client hires me personally.
Okay.
And most hospitals are used to this.
They
now.
Are.
Yes. They're very welcoming, most of them. And so I'm just there with the family.
Yeah.
And they're, oh, there's the photographer, you know. Some of them love the camera. The doctors, they will actually pose for the camera when the baby's born.
Really?
Some of them have asked me how I want the lighting in the room. Some of them don't pay any attention to me.
Well, there are other things obviously going on.
Yeah, there are some hospitals that have policies where you can't take pictures of the actual birth moment.
Really?
Yeah, and they make you stop clicking. But it doesn't really alter the total birth story, really.
Diana, obviously this isn't an easy job. The whole process, labor can last, you know, I mean, it can be fast. I mean, thankfully fast for a lot of women, but also painfully slow as well. It could go even days, which I shudder the thought. So it can't be an easy job for you during the whole labor experience. So when you started this process, you don't know how long you're going to be on your feet or in that room.
You don't know. And that's why birth photography requires lots of stamina, lots of passion, lots of, you know, understanding that you are there not just to click a camera and take pictures, but you're really there to hold space for a woman who is really performing a miracle. And, you know, there is not only the day of the birth, but the whole time that you spend of being on call for this family. It's what takes a lot for all of us, because being on call means that you necessarily cannot be on vacation, that you cannot be super far away from where the family is located or when it's where it's going to give birth. And it's all part of it. It's all okay, you know, as long as there's an understanding from both parties and as long as there's good communication between me and my clients. And I always ask them to, you know, let me know when things change, when they feel like they're going to be in labor and, you know, if they're going to leave the house, if they need to go to the hospital or birth center. As long as that communication is clear, then everything works out.
That communication, by the way, is a contract, right? I mean, this is something that you guys come up with beforehand. And you're essentially Stephanie on retainer, right? Like they
yes.
have you for,
yes.
because that baby could come at any time.
I'm theirs. Usually it's about a month. I mean, we can be on call for technically 38 weeks up to 42 weeks or until they have the baby.
How specific are these contracts that we talk about? You're on retainer, you're living your life according to when this baby is going to come. What do you put in that contract? Like take me through the process.
Well, I specify that I am on call for them. I specify about the communication, like Diana said, to call me as soon as they know that they think they're in labor and to let me know when it's a good time to come is essential, the communication part. I always have a backup. We usually work with backups, and that's part of the contract too, so that they understand that that is a possibility in case we have other clients do, or in case of, you know, an earthquake or something like that.
Ooh. Diana, do clients get made up for something like this? I mean, does a woman who's about to give birth really want to deal with the idea of being photographed? Because, you know, I mean, she's not in her best moment. I mean, obviously it's a life-changing moment, but it's not the most visually appealing moment, I guess, is what you would say.
Some do, especially if they're having a planned cesarean, then they get their hair done, their nails done, their makeup done.
They, you know, do that.
They do that. Some moms, they just want to be in their most raw possible state, and so they don't care for that. And to be honest with you, what I love most is the pictures right after the birth. You see moms almost like cross-eyed, or, you know, dads in total, like, state of
exhaustion, but those are like the pictures that are real. They're like, this is how mom looked like as soon as she gave birth to you, you know, like after working for 24 hours.
So mom can hold that picture up. Like when you're giving her a problem later in life, she can be like, look, this was me when I was giving birth to you. Do you see what I was going through?
And you see the passion and the love between the couples and the, and then if they have siblings, that's some of the best to capture when the siblings come in and meet their new little baby or brother or sister. And yeah.
Do you guys get any blowback about this? Are people like, really? Birth photography? Come on.
I think it requires some, I don't want to say education, but like explaining what birth photography is about. And it's not for everybody, but it's definitely growing. And I think women are starting to understand that it's okay to not look perfect all the time. You know, we see half-naked women on billboards all the time. Why shouldn't we be seeing women in labor?
Diana, do you think, I mean, we're in this time of like documenting everything. We want to put things on Instagram and Facebook and everything else so people can see, hey, this is us. This is what we're doing right now. Do you see a lot of that going on with your work?
Yes, absolutely. It can either be from, you know, our side as birth photographers and artists in general, but also the families are starting to share the images and be okay with that. And I think it's really important, not just because it's good for business, but also because there is finally a bigger understanding of what birth is about and how women can give birth not necessarily strapped down all the time or, you know, in a hospital environment, but they can give birth in the woods or home or in the bathtubs. And
you've taken photographs in places like that?
Yes. And it's all about normalizing birth and it's all about empowering women. And if both parties are doing the work, then everybody wins.
Are there any hospitals that are more friendly for you guys doing this as opposed to others?
Most definitely.
Really?
I would have to say a majority are, but then there are some that are even more so. Cedars,
really?
Hospital.
Yeah.
St. Friendlier. John's Friendlier. Hospital.
Yeah.
Tarzana Hospital.
Santa Monica, UCLA.
UCLA is
Westwood
wonderful.
And Santa Monica, yeah.
What's a hospital like when they're like, yeah, this is a little bizarre?
Well, I actually have a photograph of a nurse yelling at me.
Ooh.
Really? You know, I was supposed to stop at the birth moment, but this birth meant a lot to this mother because she had a previous loss, and I wanted to make sure I captured everything, and I was ready to go as soon as the baby was born, and because I had the camera up, she said, stop taking pictures.
Right. That's the moment, right? That's the moment when you're not supposed to take pictures.
Right. But yeah. I wasn't. I actually had my camera
up. Just the camera up and
yeah,
ready to go.
And I literally started clicking when I saw the baby coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know the rules, but the nurse didn't
know
that
rules,
you knew
the rules. I know the rules, but I have to be ready, too. It's a fine line you have to balance because you're there for your clients, and you have to also work within the policies and the doctor, too.
I want to thank you both. What a great conversation. And so interesting. We are documenting everything now, but it's such a beautiful experience.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Stephanie Enten, local doula, birth photographer, as is Diana Hynek. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You remember that moment in The Matrix when Neo hinges slowly backward, narrowly dodging a bullet? I know you know that scene. Well, now imagine four living, breathing humans frozen just like that in the name of art, performance art. Those people are paralyzed in this gravity-defying position for hours, 2 days a week. The show In Just a Blink of an Eye is from artist Xu Zhen, and it was recently acquired by the Museum of Contemporary Art. The show is at MoCA on Grand Avenue, now through September 1st, on weekends, and Lindsay Preston Zappas is here to talk about it, founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, welcome.
Hi, Steve.
All right, so what is it like to walk into this exhibit? Because I've already seen pictures on social media,
yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, that's gotta hurt.
Yeah, so, right, that's kind of the initial thought. So you walk in, there are four performers arranged throughout the gallery, spread about a large gallery, and they're all wearing baggy street clothes like Nike or Adidas, and they're holding this leaned back, like I think Matrix is a great reference. So their backs are almost parallel to the ground and their arms are kind of splayed in different positions, and all of their heads are looking up towards the ceiling.
No strings attached.
And so we'll get to that in a minute.
But do it.
When you walk, we'll talk about it in a minute. So when you walk in, there's this really interesting moment because you're let in with a group of about 30 other people. So there's all this movement and all the gallery guests are walking in. But these figures are totally still and they're not moving, but their eyes are blinking. And so they're looking straight up and their eyes are really the most expressive part of their body, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, it's the only thing that they're allowed to move, their eyes.
Yeah, and even their hands are in very specific positions. So really all that you can see are their hands, their faces, and some of their hair. Some of them have long hair that's kind of pulled by gravity straight towards the floor. Yeah. And I actually know one of the performers, so I was able to ask her about her experience. Her name's Dana Pennenberg, and she told me that it's about a team of about 20 performers that actually rotate through these four sculptures, and each group only performs for about 20 minutes at a time, and then they take a break. And so it's a really humane kind of way to go about it. But they're mostly trained dancers, she told me. And it's a bit ironic because in this piece, they have to stay still. So it's kind of against what you might do as a dancer. But of course, it involves a lot of bodily control, and the hands, as I said, are all part of it as well.
Mocha won't say how these performers do that. Hold these postures.
Yes.
Are there any theories about the mechanics of this?
Yeah. So Mocha is so tight-lipped about this. Obviously, these performers aren't like flexing their abs and holding this pose.
I mean, I'm thinking maybe fish line or something like that.
There's
no
fish line.
No. All right.
So, you know, I asked Mocha about the armatures in particular, and they won't even acknowledge that there is an armature underneath. They're not saying yes or no either way. So, and this is in conjunction with the artist's own wishes that he doesn't really want any information spreading about how that's done. So, I had a friend tell me, though, that it's really similar to the shtick that street performers do, right?
Or like mimes or something.
Yeah, or
that.
Like
yeah, yeah.
The silver guy
right.
in San Francisco. And so, I did some Googling and was looking at how they do it. And often there's a metal kind of rectangular base underneath them and a vertical metal rod that will fit into a customized shoe, sort of in the back of a shoe. And then that is what actually stabilizes the figure to kind of move around from there. So I'm not saying that is or isn't what happens.
It's just
but
a theory.
That's my theory.
It's a Lindsay
and
theory.
I imagine there is support for the backs and the necks in this case as well.
It's worth mentioning, I think, because when we talk about a gallery, a museum, such as Mocha, that you, when you purchase art, you have like a physical, tangible thing that you can purchase and store away if you
right.
want to bring it out or what. These are people. And when we're talking about performance, what does it actually mean for a museum to acquire it, to buy it?
It's really interesting. And I think the acquisition of this piece has brought up a lot of questions and also shown a light on the fact that not that many museums have a practice of collecting performance. So it's something people are definitely talking about. So Mocha, for instance, owns over 7,000 works of art, but only one other performance art. So this is only the second performance piece that's going into the collection. Mocha, as you might know, has a new director, Klaus Biesenbach, and this is a new initiative of his to kind of mirror the amount of performance art happening in LA by actually starting to acquire some of it.
Well, in just a blink of an eye, runs through September 1st, Lindsay. By the way, you're not only our regular here at Greater LA, you're also putting together this KCRW newsletter. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so this is really exciting. So in addition to these segments that you and I do, I'm also starting a weekly newsletter that is called Art Insider. And you can subscribe to this at kcrw.com/about/newsletters and click Art Insider there to subscribe. And in each email, I'm going to be highlighting three kind of top shows to go see and giving you a little insight to how to get there, what you can expect. We'll also be giving a little more insight to some of our conversations,
yeah,
Steve, and linking
right.
back to those. And then another part I'm really excited about is called Gallery Talk. And that's going to be some sort of insider information from artists or curators and stories behind some of these things. So, for instance, from Dana, the performer I mentioned, I'll be sharing some of her experiences of what it's like to to perform in a Zhuzhen piece. So that'll be kind of exclusive newsletter content.
And probably a lot of pictures, too.
Yes, all right, definitely.
Looking forward to that. Lindsay Preston Zappas, founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, that's it for us today. Boy, we ran the gamut, didn't we? Intense soccer to dueling doulas with cameras to Matrix performance art. What a show. You can hear it again, by the way, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Grab the podcast, too, while you're there. Tomorrow, remembering a women's air derby from 90 years ago and the colorful characters who were part of it. Next on KCRW, all the president's lawyers. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for the ear and your attention. Have a great day.